You're listening to Asheville FM at WSFM LP 103.3 Asheville. This is News Team correspondent Gary Leonard, and I am joined in the studio with David Forbes. David, thank you so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
And what we are going to do today is the City Council report on the most recent City Council meeting that took place on April 23rd. David and I actually were going to delay this, but we decided to move forward.
Yes, we did.
That was a joke.
Which is more than than can be said for Asheville City Government, which seemed to make the opposite choice on just about every issue out there.
So, David, let's go ahead and start there. And so there was a good bit of contention coming into the meeting on the 23rd, specifically regards to the Flatiron building and the vote that City Council was going to go ahead and move forward with in terms of if they were going to allow that to be a hotel. So what exactly happened with that?
So this is a really interesting case. I think everyone, or dang near everyone who follows city politics, had geared up for a big fight.
Mm-hmm.
The Flatiron Hotel proposal is, you know, so the current piece up at the Asheville Blade is called the Hotel Wars, which is a primer kind of on these battles over hotels, which are one of the fastest growing, and I think it's safe to say probably the most hated industry in Asheville by locals. And, of course, the Flatiron is neither the first and certainly won't be the last hotel battle, but it is a particularly key one. It's a, you know, kind of downtown landmark. The developer and the current owner say that, you know, turning into a luxury hotel, another luxury hotel across from two other fairly pricey hotels, is the only way that they can possibly preserve the historic building, which locals generally, I have to say, aren't buying for a lot of reasons. One is that they both stand to make many, many millions off the deal. The owner will make $16 million alone. Yeah, a lot of money. And at least $16 million. And also that that historic preservation doesn't really have the same ring if all the locals get kicked out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a place with all the locals gone but pretty historic buildings is pretty closer to a cemetery than a city.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's worth noting. So in the fights kind of leading up to this, you hadn't seen that get much traction with a lot of locals. And the Flatiron seems to cross a lot of lines that city officials say that they hold kind of dear.
Mm-hmm.
It would kick out about 70 local businesses and organizations. This is some of the last non-gentry business, you know, commercial and organizational space in the heart of downtown. Generally,
and they've got that great elevator.
Yeah. Generally, the city's guidelines call for building like this to have 40 plus parking spaces, you know, within a very either on the site itself or within a very close distance. This would not do that at all. In fact, the developers would take 50 spaces from already very cramped city and county decks nearby, which are pretty far away. So that's not exactly popular. Even down to like some of the infrastructural stuff, like generally, the city requires that there be a loading zone and a drop-off zone, one for guests, one for, you know, resupplying the hotel. This would only have a loading zone, which could possibly cause some snarls in a pretty congested part of the city. So it kind of crosses, you know, every line.
Yeah.
And so basically this is a key battle not just for what it would mean itself and in itself if it passed.
And it's a key battle that has culminated in a lot of hotels recently being approved on 4-3-ish votes.
Yes. Some locals are calling kind of a hotel freeze.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of public backlash about the industry very early in the process for some hotels. Late last year, last fall, and following that, you saw council projects that were coming for council for hotels either get delayed when it looked like council wouldn't pass them. Even one was even turned down outright, which is the first time that's happened since council took back authority over hotels in 2017. You know, the Flatiron, again, it's not the first. It won't be the last.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty key because the city would have to give so many exceptions to it. And the impact would be pretty devastating in its own right to kind of the local communities that rely on these organizations and businesses or find them convenient. But also, and for the impact on, you know, the prices of similar space that would have throughout the rest of downtown. But also, as we saw with the hotel freeze and eventually kind of thawing out in April when council did sign off on two of those hotels that had been delayed by one vote margins in both cases, morale is kind of everything in this fight. Hoteliers, like anyone else, kind of read the signals on council. And, you know, right now that signal is hotels will probably only pass by a single vote. And that's kind of risky. So, but if the Flatiron project passes, that dynamic changes a lot because all of a sudden councils basically signal they'll pass anything because this breaks so many of what they've said of the lines that they'll, you know, that they're hesitant about hotels, that lead them to be hesitant about hotels. So a lot of people are watching it not just for its impact itself, but for kind of the ripple effects it could have.
The potential precedent.
Yeah. If the Flatiron gets passed, expect a wave of hotels that's made the previous one look like a trickle, look like mm-hmm. nothing almost, because the signal will be from council that they will pass anything that's put before them that's a hotel.
So, David, coming back to kind of the delay, thank you for all that context.
No problem.
And the massive buildup that took place, and there was no vote.
Oh, yes. And this was – it was interesting. Like, you know, I'm a journalist. I cover this. I'm on all the – you know, get all the city updates mm-hmm. and everything. I was heading down there early because it was planning to be a very full meeting, and I wanted to make sure I had a seat. So I was heading down there early and arrived at City Hall around, you know, a little after, you know, about 4:22, 4:23 or so. And there's a sign posted in the door saying the hearing's been delayed. Mm-hmm. Indeed it has. And literally at the 11th hour, less than an hour before the – according to the city clerk, less than an hour before the meeting was set to begin, the developer requests a delay. And council typically will grant those mm-hmm. delays, if at least the first time, when they're requested. And they did. They unanimously voted to grant the delay to May 14th. So if any of your listeners out there are planning, and I think a lot of people are, on attending and, you know, kind of voicing, in a lot of cases, I think, opposition to the Flatiron proposal, to the proposal to turn the Flatiron into a hotel, May 14th. Plan on showing up May 14th. May 14th is the date they'll vote on it.
Would you say there was a good turnout last night of folks that were there prepared to speak?
I mean, so that's a good question. I think a lot of people didn't because they got there, they saw the sign, and the sign was like on not just on the door to council's chambers, but it was on the door to City Hall mm-hmm. itself. So anyone coming in, I think a lot of people just turned back around.
Yeah.
Understandably. But there were some people there, and during public comment, Nina Tovish, who's been a local, who's been a prominent, you know, vocal opponent of the Flatiron proposal, kind of, you know, took council to task a little bit, said, look, we have people lined to speak. People have taken time off to come speak on this. You would delay it at the last minute. And Mayor Esther Mannheimer's response was, well, developers can request a continuance. Sometimes this happens. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of speculation about why this was delayed. Again, according to city clerk Maggie Burleson, no reason was given. Mm-hmm. The developer didn't cite a reason. But locals have observed, you know, a pretty likely scenario is that the developer just didn't think they had the votes mm-hmm. and wants to see if, you know, the 2-3 week gap will give them the time to modify the project a little bit or convince one or two council members who might be on the fence or might be kind of against this to kind of change their votes. And this happens in politics, but it certainly does. Like, a lot of it happens out of the public eye. So
right. The
public ire about this is definitely kind of understandable.
Well, David, to the point of maybe winning a couple extra votes, I mean, I know you and I are not in the work of churning the rumor mill, but, you know, this city and this municipality is not exempt to backroom deals. And we've seen this before
in terms
of specifically hotels and certain council members swaying one way versus, you know, a consistency or inconsistency of a vote previously.
What could potentially happen? Piece, their votes are all over the map.
Right. So in theory, the developers could try and win even by a few votes.
Yes. So I think the expectation going in is this is going to be a close vote just due to the sheer amount of public pressure against this and that even it could swing as much as, you know, say 5-2 against it. So I think the developers are definitely and we've seen this throughout the development process. They got a lot of backlash at the initial meeting they had, usually the initial developer meeting. This is last fall. Only a few property owners show up and said like 50, 60 very angry locals showed up against this proposal when they went before the Planning and Zoning Commission, which did approve this going forward 4-2.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but this particular hotel did not have staff recommendation, correct?
So that's interesting. It didn't really have a staff recommendation the first time on Planning and Zoning.
Uh-huh.
Staff are, despite what they say are their reservations, recommending approval of it at the council level. That's interesting too. That's very rare. Usually, staff takes a position fairly early and kind of sticks by it.
But
most of the time, it's in favor of a project being approved.
Right.
But sometimes they will say, "Hey, we don't recommend this for reasons A, B, or C."
Fascinating.
So yeah, that's kind of unusual as well. But by the time they reached planning and zoning, the developer had some heads of local organizations like the Historic Preservation Society lined up to speak. They had a 7-minute video about why this is going to be such a great thing for everyone. Yeah, so it didn't really go down well with most of the locals in the room, but you know that's not who they were aiming at. They're aiming at the commissioners and the council members.
Of course.
And we'll see how persuasive that is. But yeah, I think May 14th is going to tell the tale at this point, unless there's another delay. So the other reason was that the father of Wyatt Stevens, who's one of the main attorneys representing the developer, passed away. And that maybe that was a reason for the delay. We'll see. You know, projects have gone forward before, and just that attorney has been absent, so they had like a family tragedy or something like that happen. So, but who knows?
Yeah.
It could be a combination. But you know, I think it's a pretty likely scenario that there was at least some real hesitation about whether they had the votes to pass or not.
Well, David, moving on from the Flatiron Building, that decision was not the only one that was delayed. There were a couple others. Are you able to speak to those?
Sure. So this agenda, on this agenda, council was supposed originally to consider this development with, you know, retail and a movie theater and fairly expensive residential units. In the site of the former Sears. Now, when this development first came forward earlier this year, it got shot down pretty hard. Councilmember Keith Young was particularly assertive in saying, look, you know, he's seen the CEO of Sears, who's run the company, in the ground. And actually now Sears is against, too, saying this person is, you know, taking billions from the company. Had spun off this separate real estate arm, which was what was proposing to do this development. That's who we're proposing to do this development, and he said, look, this seems like a scam. Bluntly, you know, Sears got run to the ground, and now you're turning around. We're supposed to thank you for bringing jobs back that your company, parent company, was responsible for ending in the first place. And literally, as he was tearing into this kind of Sears real estate spinoff, they withdrew the proposal. And we're supposed to come back at this meeting.
Like in real time, like in front of...
Yeah. The developer representative literally went up and said, we'd like to withdraw our proposal. It was an example of like when council members actually do kind of speak up and take a position and get pretty harsh about some of the things that they, you know, see as unjust. You can actually have some immediate impact. So it was supposed to come back at this meeting. It was not. It's being delayed till May 28th. That was not the only thing that was delayed either. Council was, as a matter of fact, I think 3 out of 5 items outside of the consent agenda and presentations, or they didn't have any presentations, but outside and proclamations and things like that. When you get to, you know, new business, old business, public hearings, things that council actually discusses, debates, and votes on, 3 out of 5 were delayed. Flatiron was delayed. This issue was delayed. And council was also supposed to take a look at a policy on using city land for affordable housing, which is one thing the city has really been trying to kind of ramp up. Look, we've got all this land the city owns around the city. Let's use the fact that we own that to create some favorable deals to make affordable housing in these areas and kind of put it in different spots of the city where it may not go otherwise. That was delayed. Apparently, the only reason given was that City Manager Deborah Campbell wanted to delay it until the next meeting. So delayed it was.
Delay, that is the theme of that meeting. So moving on past delays into things that were actually discussed, there was a resolution to oppose offshore drilling.
Yes,
anything,
which passed unanimously.
Anything significant that came out of that?
So it was Asheville is one of the first non-coastal cities to pass this resolution. It opposes drilling, especially on the Atlantic seaboard, which the Trump administration has made some moves toward, and a lot of people fairly understandably are opposed to for the impact on the climate and on, you know, coastal ecosystems, the possibility of an oil spill. So that was on council's consent agenda, which is a list of, for those who aren't, you know, regular city government watchers, a list of pretty non-controversial items usually that council just passes on one vote. They don't go item by item. They might have 10, even 15 items, and they'll just take one single vote on them. And usually it's, you know, minor purchasing stuff, resolutions like this. But occasionally council members will highlight one particular item.
Such as this.
Such as this.
Were there any coalitions or organizations that were particularly kind of pushing this forward for more landlocked municipalities to get on board in opposition?
Yeah, a number of environmental nonprofits have, mm-hmm. and as we know, there are a lot of those in Asheville.
Yep.
So, yeah, that was this is not a surprise. You know, that's of the many, many, many issues that are controversial in this council. You know, hotels, mm-hmm. how to have housing, how to have racial equity, mm-hmm. whether to rein in the police department or not, like. But this kind of environmental support is generally not.
Sure.
But interestingly, also on the consent agenda, you had a member of a city board bring forward Kim Roney, who sits in the transit committee,
mm-hmm.
note that she kind of saw a contradiction here because she supported, obviously, council moving forward with the resolution against offshore drilling, but that on the same consent agenda, they were going to purchase two more hybrid buses for the bus fleet. And that she had a concern because the city, according to its plans, is supposed to be switching to an all-electric bus fleet and mm-hmm. kind of its goal of being zero emission as much as possible. And so why weren't they seeking out electric buses? They're kind of past schedule to do so, according to some of their initial plans. Transportation Director Kim Putnam said that there's only one manufacturer in the U.S. Of electric buses that are the size and type the city needs,
mm-hmm.
That other cities have been sending those buses back. And that, they were still intending someday, maybe, to shift to an all-electric fleet. But, there's some delays.
Yeah.
So it seems to be the theme.
More delays. Well, David, thank you, as always, for joining us for another City Council Report. So regarding articles such as Hotel Wars and some of the many others, where can folks learn more about what's going on with Asheville City Government?
AshevilleBlade.com. And actually, I'd be remiss if I didn't highlight, we actually kind of almost had a double feature because before Hotel Wars, there's an excellent piece by Matilda Bliss, a local writer, longtime activist, called The Tourism Machine. And it's about the Tourism Development Authority, which controls all the hotel tax dollars in town and is run by hoteliers. Mm-hmm. It's not directly part of being local government. And this is a really interesting article on the roots of the TDA, how powerful it is, the corporate ties of this industry, the kind of dark ties of the hotel and tourism industries to segregation in this town.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really wonderful, powerful, in-depth piece. And actually, Matilda's going to be speaking as one of the panelists at a Reimagining the TDA forum tonight at 6 Impact Library.
That's great. Well, David, thank you so much for joining, and until next time.